So, yes, I'm going to tell you about this busy title here. So I'm a Incarpath, Stanford, it's a joint venture between Stanford and Slack. These are my collaborators, Steve Allen and Adam Mantz, mainly you'll see all over the talk in CAIPAC, and Harold Ebeling in Hawaii, and Alex is a student as well. They were still in the group. So I'm going to tell you about all of these constraints that we're going to use. We're going to pin using Galaxy clusters, so we're going to count clusters as a function of mass and redshift, and obtain constraints on all these cosmologies and clusters of physics to build here. So basically, all this information comes from this series of papers. The first paper using the previous analysis, and these four papers here with the analysis that I show you here. So this is a series of paper where we detail the new method that we use for this experiment, and where we present results for dark energy, cluster astrophysics, constraints on general relativity, and neutrino properties. So you can see that they have a busy schedule, especially because we're running a little bit late. So I'm going to tell you about, so we have developed in our group two different experiments. I'm going to focus on the second one, but I have to tell you a little bit of the first one, which is the measuring the gas mass fraction in galaxy clusters. With that experiment, we measure distance to galaxy clusters. But I'm going to just review this experiment just because I'm going to use the results of this experiment for the second experiment as well, or at least part of it. So as I'm going to show you. So this is the why I'm going to talk about this for the experiment. I'm going to show as well results on cosmology in this experiment, but I'm mainly going to focus on the second experiment, which is number counts of clusters as a function of mass and redshift, which you know is a very sensitive proof of cosmology, and I'm going to show you actually that it works. And we're going to use, as I said, galaxy clusters. Why we're going to, and we're going to use measurements of galaxy clusters in the X-ray. So why we want to do that? So we went to that, like as I show here. I mean, just as initial for people that don't know about what it means, X-ray galaxy cluster. So what we have here is like the same cluster in optical and X-ray. So I think that shows why we want to use X-rays for detecting clusters to make a proper selection function to do an experiment like number custom clones, and to measure actually a lot of other properties of the clusters like the mass that we need to relate the experiment with the underlying cosmology. So here is an optical, we just see the galaxies basically. Here what we see in X-ray is the gas, the intercluster medium of the cluster. So we can see here that it's basically one big collapse object, and this basically shines because there's like a huge gravitational potential, which heats up the gas up to high temperatures and emits in X-ray. So what we're gonna use these objects, and we're gonna measure, as I said, their matter, dark energy, cluster physics, gravity, and neutrinos. Okay, so first of all, as I said, I'm gonna review the F-gas experiment just quickly, mainly for the purposes of the second experiment, but as well I'm going to show you which kind of measurements we can get from this experiment. Basically, we measure this quantity here, that is the ratio between the gas that I just saw that was shining in X-ray. So we measure that gas through X-ray luminosity, that is that depends on the density. So it goes with distance to the power of 2.5, and then we're going to measure the total mass using the temperature, so it goes with the power of 1. So this ratio here for determining this ratio, we are not all, so we want to compare the ratio of variance to the total mass in the cluster, not only gas, so there is as well a stellar mass, so that's why we have this extra part here that comes from measurements. I'm gonna not go into details of that, but somebody can ask if they want. But basically what we're interested in is the ratio of variance to the total mass, the fraction of variance. This is the ratio of variance and total mass in the universe. So we're gonna compare the fraction of baryons in the clusters with the total universe. This is because we use the largest clusters in the universe that we can do this comparison. But of course, there is an extra factor here that we call a bias factor, which we need to account for, and we need to get somehow, and we're going to do it from simulations. I'm going to show you in a minute. Yes?
Assume that the standard mass fraction should be a function of cluster mass. And
second?
So I would assume that all these numbers should be a function of cluster mass as well as fraction. How do you deal with these things?
Oh, I'm going to show you.
Okay.
Basically, what we have here, we just rearrange this expression here. Basically, we can see we can measure omega matter if we know omega baryons from, for example, Big Bang nuclear synthesis. If we go this quantity from measurements of the stellar fraction, F gas is our measurement. And we need to know the bias factor that I'm going to show you how. So basically, when we put all together, there is some extra factors, some technical factors that we can discuss if somebody's interested, but basically this factor here comes from here, and then this is the distance dependence that comes from there. So basically this distance dependence to the 1.5, so that's what allows you to measure distances to the galaxy clusters in the same way that you measure distances to the supernova, and at the same time you measure omega matter, so you break the degeneracy between W and omega matter. So
what is theta?
Theta is just the angular scale of the cluster. This is something like that you need to include as well. But that's like a very small factor. So that's the main factor here. That's just a correction. That's just a correction because of the profiles of the F gas. But actually this comes from the data. I can tell you later if you want as well. I'm gonna have a plot that you can see. Why? Because there is a little bit of a slope remaining in the profile. So basically, we need to obtain, as I said, this gas depletion from simulations. So this is non-gravitative simulations, and show that as a function of redshift, this quantity should be constant. That's what we expect from theory. So this is from the simulations, but so what? No, that's just a result that comes out from simulations. From these simulations here, these are the points from simulation.
Mm-hmm. Here you said that it's expected to be a constant, and why would I expect that to be a constant?
Just
you didn't say that.
No, just because of the outcome of the simulation.
Well, these are not that do not account for the physics of the surface classes, that do not account for star formation, that do not account for physics.
Yes.
So that would actually introduce a bias in terms of
No, actually, you don't want to account for that because actually current simulation, well, okay, there is simulations as well accounting for that. So, and there is some bias respect to that. I just show these simulations because current simulations cannot account actually for observational, right? So they produce too many stars and so on and so forth.
But these don't produce any stars. So this
is exactly. That's right. So basically the philosophy here, instead of using something that you know for sure that is wrong, use something that at least,
is still wrong.
No, like not. So, okay. So the question is not, okay. So basically this redshift, so this error bars here, so this is the systematic uncertainty that we include. This accounts for all the for different simulations, as you said, like simulations that include like different physics on top of it. They have different results. This is a very generous band that we include. Okay, all that is included into the analysis. And you know, the results I'm going to present always include all this huge band here for this bias, okay? And, okay, you not only expect that from simulations, so what's going on here is when the cluster forms, the only thing that you expect that is happening is when the cluster forms, there is some gas that is expelled out of the cluster. So this is a small amount of gas that is expelled out of the cluster. This is what they give you the bias, basically. Okay, once the cluster is formed for this really big system, okay, basically there is no way to expel gas from the cluster anymore. basically. From the radius that we're talking here about the one quarter of the video radius. So all the processes that can do that, like, you know, all the processes that can do that, like, you know, a thermal process or like AGN or whatever, cannot actually expel this huge amount of, I mean, this, we're talking about 10 to the 15 solar masses clusters, okay? So cannot basically modify that, but so much that actually goes out of this band here as well.
So that means that it would sell to a high mass range for the clusters.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
We don't know
absolutely.
What actually happens.
Absolutely. So that's very important, actually. I wanted to mention before, I didn't say it, but I keep saying that this is just for the very big clusters. Okay. When you go to a smaller mass cluster, that's not longer true because the mass of the cluster is smaller, the potential is smaller, and it's much more difficult for the cluster to contain the gas. So it's like energetically, this process that can maybe compete with the gravitational potential. For these really big clusters, there's no energetic sources that we know of that can compete with the gravitational potential. Okay, and there's only this extra factor that is spelled at the beginning of the formation of the cluster. Anyway, so I'm just trying to go over fast this part. That's what I meant. I just wanted to do it for the purpose of what I'm going to use it later, because I'm going to focus on the second experiment.
Sorry.
Yeah.
So are we dealing with
Yeah, 2500, yeah. 2500 that...
What?
2500 times...
25?
25.
Wow.
3500 times the critical mass.
And
so it's basically a quarter of the video radius.
Yeah, I know. Oh. If you put it in delta terms, it's actually pretty amazing.
But when you're focusing on the center, then you have to worry about not just the expulsion of gas, but you have to worry about cooling of gas as well. So mm-hmm. so it's it, they
yeah.
are big clusters, but the observations
yeah.
are
you
in a very narrow
to,
range. So
yeah.
you have to be a little careful about
yeah.
that.
You don't want to go too close, you don't want to go too far. For different reasons, and it turns out, for I can show you later. We can discuss later, but turns out that for the moment, all the observational data tells us that actually the best place to do these measurements is at R2500, the radius of 2500 times the critical density.
So it's just where you can measure.
No. Well, okay. We have measurements all the way there and actually after that as well.
I think it's
so I'll show you the radius now. I'll show you the details. Just try to go pass over that point.
I think you should show the data. I think the data plots are more convincing because the scatter goes down.
Yes.
I think theoretically you think that it's a daft thing to do. But if you see the data plots, I think you get less critical.
Right. Yeah, I'll show you in a minute. That's a good understanding. Thanks. So this is other theoretical uncertainties that we model here. We have to model all these theoretical uncertainties. This is just from the calibration and the modeling of the system. This is for the baryonic mass in the stars, but actually these are very small effects compared with the rest of the effects, but this is from data. And this is from non-thermal pressure support, that is another important point here. We come for 10%. Again, this is consistent with simulation, but actually is consistent as well with observations, these two recent papers, that tells you actually the turbulence should be not bigger than 10%. And actually that is what we expect to be the main source of systematic uncertainty. So for these big clusters again. So okay, so here's the data. That's what I would say. So here, all these are data points. So you can see here that this is a big scatter in the center where you expect it because you can have like AGN or other processes. And then the scatter goes down here. That is where we measure. Okay? So this basically, the scatter is undetected when we have actually 5% in distance of the weight mean scatter. So supernova currently have a scatter of 7% and they detect intrinsic scatter. We still have not detected intrinsic scatter. There is not intrinsic scatter here, it's just a statistical scatter. Okay? So you can see here how the scatter goes down. This is as a function of redshift. So this is data as a function of redshift. Okay? So this you can see here that This is the air gas measurements at this radius here, that is basically a quarter of a video radius. So this is actual clusters. You measure the gas mass with X-ray luminosity. You measure the total mass with the temperature. That's the fraction, and that's what you measure here. A fraction at least a quarter of the video radius, and you have different redshifts. Right.
And then they measure the baryonic mass from the luminosity.
Okay, yeah. There's a lot of steps going into this plot, right?
Yeah, but actually you can see here, I mean, that, you know, you measure the scatter here, it's all a statistical scatter, there's not intrinsic scatter. Any process, so this is, all these are measured data points, individual data points measured. You plot them and you don't see a scatter. So any, all these processes that, so hold on, let me finish the sentence. All these processes we're talking about, turbulence, AGM, whatever, it should show up here in the scatter if they're important. Well, and they don't show up at this level. Of course, we have like more data coming. We're going to reduce the error bus.
The sample of clusters, I mean, that are relaxed here, right?
Yes, this is very important. They have to be relaxed above 5 kV and above a certain luminosity, that this doesn't matter once you actually say that they have to be above 5 kV.
What's the definition of a relaxed cluster? Or a relaxed cluster?
Okay. I didn't want to get into this because, like, if you allow me, I'll answer that at the end, if you don't mind, because I want to get to the main point of the talk. And if not, then...
I actually need to correct something. So you say that these effects are not important. All you're proving here is that the effects aren't random. There could be a systematic effect that shifts all the point up or down, and you wouldn't detect that from radius chi squared. So... it's a random turbulence effect,
yeah,
that would,
which would not affect your cosmology.
No, that would affect
the cosmology. Just comes the cosmology of that. So the measurement of the energy just comes from the shape of this.
Okay.
The shape of that.
I see. That's fine.
The other thing is the measurement of omega matter.
Right. They could be redshift dependent, but I mean, all you're saying is it's not random. There is no unaccounted random error here. But there could
no,
be.
No, what they're telling us is that they're regular systems. That between one and the other one are regular systems, that we know what we measure. And we know that they're not affected by, you know, one system is more affected than another by certain physics.
Sure.
That's what we know.
That's exactly.
Right.
What I can know is that these systems, the red systems that are called cool core clusters, that they calculate different region than the average cluster in the scaling relation, the luminosity temperature scaling relation. So for a given mass, they have higher luminosity because they're more concentrated, gas more concentrated towards the center. So
I'll show you about the scaling relations. I have all the figures about the scaling relations. I'll show you that. So just quickly since I've been answering other questions, like the relaxed how we select the relaxed clusters is basically purely from the images. So there is several techniques that we can apply. So basically the centroid at different annulus have to be centered. So you have to not see any substructure. And I mean, basically it has to be smooth. And and have to be basically, basically the shape has to be basically a spherical. So that's certain criteria that, like, basically, what it gives you is just, so it gives you your selection at a certain level, and then anything beyond that is what we're trying to account here and trying to account with all the systematic uncertainties. But if there's more questions on that, I'll get later. So these are the constraints that we obtain. This is the comparison with supernova and CMB and the combination of all the data sets. So you can see here that we obtain actually similar constraints of the supernova. These are constraints from the shape, as I was saying before, the constraints on omega lambda, not on omega matter. The omega matter is the normalization, which is dominated by systematics, and dark energy is not dominated by systematics yet. So, okay, just and I try to go faster. This is the constraints again compared with supernova. So you can see that it's perfectly competitive, actually, even a little bit better. We could actually, we got the degeneracy with omega matter, and we have sorry, this is like basically a four phi sigma detection as the supernova of the existence of lambda or something like that. Okay, so basically I'm going to the next experiment. That's where I was trying to go. One thing I wanted to say that with all the questions I forgot. So this is, as I was saying, it's a very low scatter measurement. So that is going to allow us to use the F-gas, through the F-gas, to use the gas mass as a proxy for the total mass for the next experiment. Okay. So the growth stocker experiment, as we heard of several times, and as we know, there's quantum clusters of quantum galaxy clusters as bunch of mass and redshift is a very powerful proof for cosmology. Neil was showing before the mass function of halos here. For example, we have the results from the last results from Pinker et al. And we can see here that the reason why it's so powerful proof, especially if you go to the big systems, again, we're just focusing both experiments always for the big systems, as you can see here, around 10 to the 15 solar masses. So you can see that it's a very steep function here, which gives you the potential for measuring cosmology. Okay, so here we can see as well another example. We have to use both things, right? You have to use both simulations, and we use linear cosmology, and that's another example of how powerful it is to use this as for cosmology. That's just an example to motivate the experiment. And here is the data that you use for the experiment. These are the clusters for the survey. This is a suspension of redshift. We use three samples from the Rosetta Sky survey. This is in the north. This, yes, Rolfex is in the south. And this is in both north and south. This is the sky coverage for each. And the flux limit, this is a flux limit, X-ray flux limit selected samples. These are the flux limits. And this is the redshift range. These two for low redshift. And this is the one for redshift that actually, that's the one that gives you dark energy and constraints on gravity. This is the sample that gives you, but, of course, the combination, because you have to have low redshift and high redshift, but with only high redshift is not enough. That's what you need for the measurement. So this is the 238 clusters in total. This is redshift complete and so on, continuous. Okay, so now the next piece of information that we need here is from the question on there, scaling relations, okay? So for the first time here, in this analysis, what we do is constrain cosmological parameters and scaling relations at the same time, simultaneously, and self-consistently, okay? So all integrated in the same NCNC engine. This is a new statistical method that we explained in the papers. And that's very important for what I'm going to try to show here. So we need to go from the observable, in this case luminosity. We used two observables, basically luminosity and temperature. I'm going to show you the temperature, which is the important one for the relation with the survey. So here we have luminosity and mass. This is a fictitious uniformly distributed sample. Okay, so if you want to fit this sample without knowing any extra information, what we have, you use some statistical method and you put this line here, okay? However, so that would be, let's say, the true relation. However, we cannot do that in our experiment to do it properly. Why? Because we have two important things. First of all, we have a flux limit, actually, and a luminosity limit. So for the luminosity limit, to select the big clusters that we were saying, it's important that we select the big clusters because we know all the properties of the big clusters, how they go. So that will happen when you include a luminosity limit, okay? So what happens is that appears what we call Malcolm's bias, okay? Brighter clusters are easier to find, okay? So if you have a big scatter, like about 40% that like we have, you know, you can see here, if like for a moment you imagine that you don't see the red line,
you could fit the wrong line to the data. You know, you would fit a line that is much shallower. Okay, so that's not correct. So we cannot just go to the data and fit a line, but that's been done like in previous works. So that's not correct. That's what I'm saying, that we have to be self-consistent. We have to know what's the cosmology. We have to know what's the mass function and include all the information at the same time. So that's another problem, Eddington bias. Actually, what we don't have in clusters is a uniformly distributed systems. What we have is more clusters at a low mass and less clusters at high mass. Okay, so that introduces another bias. And we can see here that actually basically increases the problem that we saw before. Actually, we have even more clusters here. So that line is going to be even more shallower and like more strong. Okay.
Make that cut at 5 keV, and all, you're only considering 5 keV and above. Is that the deal?
No. In that case, we use 2.5 10 to the 44.
So what does that correspond to in temperature? Your gas fraction was based on 5 keV and above, right?
So yes, but that's a different question. I'll show you the temperature in a while. We choose this guy to get the big clusters. I'll talk about the temperature in a while. So that's what we need to avoid, okay? And to avoid that means that we need to know, again, the mass function, because we need to know that here there are more clusters than here, okay? We need to know that from the data. So this is the data, okay? And we're going to use this simple Paolo model to fit the luminosity mass relation. This is the normalization and slope with these definitions here. And we want to use a log normal scatter. Okay? So this is a simple model, and we're going to ask to the data if this simple model is enough. And I'm not going to go into the details of that for the sake of time, but I'm going to tell you, you can look at the details in the paper, that we actually ask to the data if that's enough. And the data said yes. We try to go beyond the self-similar model that Neil was talking about. This is basically what we use here for the evolution, is a self-similar model and a constant scatter. And the data, we include two parameters that I'll show them later again. And the data say, yeah, that's enough. That simple model is good enough for the current data. And we actually ask if instead of a log normal scatter, we need to go to a symmetric scatter. The data says, no, that's not necessary for the model. Once I said that, let me fit this data set here. If I not be taking into account the cosmology, I could fit, again, a line here in the middle, okay? But that's not what's going to happen. I'm going to use self-consistent field cosmology all together, and I'm going to find the best fit. So, okay, that's the best fit. The red line, which that's not what you would expect if you don't know what they just told you about. So those are the effects of the Malkuth and Eddington bias, taking into account the cosmology, okay? So this best fit here goes together with the results I'm going to present for dark energy and so on later. And that's the purple lines. That's the best, the region of the best fit that you could predict if you use something like BCES, statistical methods, all other methods. We try 3, 4, 5 methods, all would be consistent with that, which would be wrong. Okay? That's the right luminosity relation. And we see here, that's the for the volumetric measurements, for the volumetric luminosity, which is important for the experts. Those are the results that we obtain for the normalization, the slope, and the scatter. We can see here the scatter is about 40%. That's why it's important to take all this into account. And this is the simple prediction from the video theorem, okay? We can see here that our is steeper. This is consistent with excess heating, okay? So the current model says that we can have energy injection that heats from AGN, that heats the gas, raises the temperature, then decreases the density, and therefore the luminosity. And that is more important for low mass system, right? A low mass system is more affected by an AGN than a big mass system, and as I was saying before. So that's what that is showing us. So that's consistent, okay? So this is first piece of evidence for excess heating. And that's the temperature mass relation. We actually fit at the same time the luminosity mass relation, the temperature mass relation together with the cosmology. And those are the results. Again, normalization, a slope, and a scatter. The scatter here is much smaller, and this is not affected by the luminosity limit that I showed you before. That's why now the red line and the purple lines agree much better, because now we don't have a luminosity limit, okay? So we don't have that problem. And that's shallower, the slope is shallower than the video relation. Again, consistent. Remember we said we increased the temperature. So for low mass systems, the temperature should be higher. So should be shallower. So again, consistent, different data set, okay, different data consistent with the same hypothesis, excess heating from IGN. Okay.
The same effect, and that's just the concentration becomes larger for a smaller mass halo.
Second?
Concentration becomes larger for a smaller halo.
What I'm saying here is that, you know, you can always think about other options, but...
Well, that's not the option that in the minimal CDM model is...
Okay, the concentration, we look at the concentration. All that is can be marginalized or something like that. We put concentration 2 and 10, and does not affect our results.
That doesn't affect it.
So, we use a concentration of 4, but we try all these rates and it's fine.
But you assume it's constant, and the thing is that concentration is mass dependent, and that breaks cell similarity. So that's my point. Because concentration depends on mass, that means that the cell similar assumption is not correct. So that can change the slopes.
So
a little bit, I don't know how much.
Does it change it much over this mass range?
I'm not sure.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think that not in that mass range. So all these effects, again, a lot of these effects happen on lower mass objects. But again, remember that those are very big objects. Okay? And we have, as you saw, much more clusters down there that we're not using for a lot of these reasons. So this is the third piece of evidence for the cluster physics. So this is the luminosity mass relation I showed before. And this is what happens if we cortex size, the cluster. We subtract the core at that level. Okay, we subtract the core, the scatter goes away. Okay, this is being known. This is still using a lot of data sets. This is the data set that we use, the black data set that we use for the cosmology. But then here, since the scatter is so small, we could include actually the other clusters. It's not a problem. The scatter is undetected below 5%. Okay, in this relation, which tells you that that's a very good scaling relation, okay? If we are able to have precise resolution to extract the core. That's not the case for ROSET data for the moment, does not have enough resolution, but for something that the WFXT for the future, if you're able to do that, basically you're gonna be able to have a mass-limited cluster sample, basically effectively, directly, okay? Instead of going through all the pain that I've been showing here. Okay, so that's very interesting. And for the point of view of the cluster physics, what we have here, you see the red line, what we have is this value for the slope. Do you remember this number? This is consistent with the video theorem. Now, when we remove the core, where we're supposed to be the SGN, we remove that, we get rid of the scatter, and the slope goes to the video theorem, which again, consistent with the excess heating model, okay? So this is the third piece of element. On top of that, as I said before, the data is consistent with cell-similar evolution, which we have data up to redshift 0.5. So this means that whatever happened for the excess heating, when the excess heating was introduced, it was beyond 0.5, okay? Because we don't have any detection of departures from cell-similarity in this redshift range. Okay, so that's enough now for cluster physics. I'm gonna go and present the constraints on dark energy. So.
I'm
normalization factor that depends on redshift should be cosmological factor. And that was typically called gamma in the literature. Do you actually have any constraints on some excess redshift?
Yeah, I'll show you. I'll show you departure from redshift a little bit later. So I said before that we did this test. I didn't show you yet, but I'll say a few more words later. So this is the constraints just for the clusters on W. Okay, these are currently the best individual constraints for compared with the other proofs, as I'll show you in a minute. So you can see here all the individual constraints. This gives you the best constraints on W compared with supernova, even with F-gas, barren acoustic oscillations, CMB. Okay, these are constraints from the growth of a structure. This is like as opposite to the constraints of a background evolution, basically from the other proofs. Okay, so you have an independent measurement of cosmic acceleration just from the growth of galaxy clusters. So here we can see, again, well, this is the combination of everything, which of course is very good, inconsistent with lambda CDM. So just as an interesting point, if you use only clusters, you can have actually you know, everything that you need, combination of these two, if you get those kind of results, just from clusters. Okay. This is what we have in the plane W sigma 8, which is a little bit of correlation, not too much. So, and this is what we have when we compare with WMAP. Okay, WMAP basically does not have constraints on sigma 8 because this is a low redshift, but only shows constraints on sigma 8 when you use a particular model like lambda CDM. Of course, if you go to W, then the constraints, you know, get degraded like that. Does not happen with the clusters because actually what you measure is, you know, a sigma 8, a low redshift. So when you do the combination, this is the result that we have in the plane W sigma 8. And these are the combined constraints of all the data sets. You can see, you know, constraints on W on the level of 6%, you know, very good constraints, sigma 8 or metamat. Okay, so just to finish this dark energy section, I'm going to show you, starting from a previous paper some years ago, we combine all the data sets. This is now combining all the data sets, and we try to constrain dark energy evolution. And we use two parameters that actually is the value of the W now, the value of W at early times. And as normally what is used is this expression here, which fixes the redshift, the transition between W and WT at redshift 1. There is no good reason for that, theoretically, or anything like that. So what we do is marginalize over the transition rate. You don't know the transition rate, so we marginalize over that. So we have these three parameters. And that's what we present here. So I'm going to show you how that improved over the time with all the combination of data sets. This is W now and W at early times, consistent with minus one both. So there's no trend of evolution. This is 3 years after. This is using the new F-gas data and the new supernova, the new WMAP, all that is all together. Okay. This is the same, roughly the same scale. That's our improved knowledge on the evolution of W. And that's finally the current work, okay, just 1 year later, doing the XLF. So you see that there's a lot of improvement in the constraints of W0 and WET. Okay, so next stop.
So you have a very limited.
Yeah, price. I have a limited what we have data. If width is too large, there is no data. So.
Well, there is WMAP. So the distance to last scattering surface, right?
Oh, yes, but you know, like, you don't have information on the transition.
So there's an integrated information that you know the distance.
Yes, there is an integrated information, but there is, you know, beyond redshift, those kind of redshift. There is no information of like if the W changes or not. So if you include these extra parameters, it goes like, okay, I don't know what's going on. So basically, that does not make sense to include this parameter where you don't have redshift information for now, for the current, you know, late times information. So next test that we want to do is test general relativity. We presented results on dark energy, but using the cluster counts, we know
that we have the current situation. Now, we have a measurement of cosmic acceleration that basically is kinematic measurement. We have a cosmological problem from theory, okay? We have a Freeman equation. We can include dark energy. We can include a modification of gravity in one side or the other. We have now data that tells us about the growth of a structure that is a direct connection with gravity. So why not test gravity directly? We're going to test general relativity for that reason. We have been testing general relativity at solar system scales. That's a very good constraint. We don't have constraints on cosmic and cosmological scales. I'm going to show you constraints on cosmological scales. Well, there's some other constraints, but not in the sense that I'm going to present here. Okay, so basically from the data, we can do that. So the motivation is from the data point of view, we can do that. We have basically what we're going to measure is this quantity of growth of the structure. And we're going to have measurements as well of the background evolution. So we're going to put all together, we have all the information, we'll test different expansion models. Okay, so I'm just going to make a few remarks before showing you the results. This is a test of the time dependence of, you know, gravity. We assume the same scale dependence as you have. Okay? Our data have information on the evolution, on the time dependence. Okay? We're going to see if there's departures on the time dependence. We're not pretending here to test the scale dependence. That should be including other data, etc. It can be done at some moment. But for the moment, we just use a scale dependence as you are. We test only linear effects. Our data, our model, just going to be on the linear cosmology. The mass function for non-linear effects, we're going to keep using Tinker et al. Okay, we're going to assume that all that is fine. We just want to test if there's some departure at the linear side, a larger space. And finally, we're going to match GR as well at early times and the smaller scales. Okay, I already said that. Yeah, but there is, they tell you the redshift evolution that there is.
But that's for lambda CDM, right?
Yes. We include all that. That's for GR. So that's what we test for GR. Okay? So if we want to test other models, we have to include all the information for other models. Okay. So just one more piece of information we showing you the results. When we include the CMB, there is an extra power here to constrain this deviation from GR. So this is the ISW effect. We can calculate the ISW effect that way. That gives you like a relation between the density, the mass density evolution, and the potential. And we're going to use this parameterization I'm going to show you in a minute. So we're going to calculate the ISW effect using that. And that is going to include an extra power on the parameter that we want to measure. But I just have to tell you that's a very small power compared with the XLR. So that's there, but it's not a big deal. Okay. And then that's what we're going to measure here. We're going to use linear cosmology, that's linear. We're going to use the power spectrum. We're going to use the power spectrum with the scale dependence of GR. This is, you know, primordial perturbations, transfer function. And what we want to modify is the growth function. Okay, we can separate those two parts. If we use general relativity, this is a well-described evolution of delta. What we're going to do is substitute this expression here by this expression here, which is a phenomenological parameterization that has been proposed. And actually, it's basically a power law of the growth rate. And basically, this number here, gamma, is constant for GR at a very particular number. So we're going to use that in the same way that we use double D. Okay? So we test that. Oh, one more thing I'm going to want to tell you before. So one of the powers of our data is that now we not only have redshift data, but we have follow-up information. So this follow-up information, we have this distribution of redshift of clusters that we follow with X-ray measurements to measure the luminosity, the temperature, to build the scaling relation, as I showed before. 23 below 0.2, 71 for above 0.2. This is from Rosset pointed observations. This is from Chandra. Okay, that is what allows us to test departures, as you were saying. This is
normally call gamma, we just use this name here for being consistent with our formalism. This is departures from the self-similar evolution of the scaling relation, and this is departures from the scatter, from the evolution in the scatter. Okay, so we'll test those two extra parameters. I said before that the data says that they're not required, but we'll test it as well for here, because here is very important, the relative dependence. So, okay. So these are the first results I'm going to show you. This is using a suspension model lambda CDM, and these are constraints on gamma. Okay, gamma 0.55 is consistent with GR. So this is the consistency test with GR. These are the limits of this consistency test. And as I tell you before, even if I use self-similar evolution, or if I let these two parameters be free, the difference in the constraints is very small. Okay? This is the difference between the blue and the gold. Doesn't matter if you include these extra two parameters. Okay? We have information on the redshift evolution for all these distribution of clusters that we follow up. Okay? So that's one of the main deals of this new analysis. So this is the constraints, but pay attention to here, there's something important to notice. Yeah?
That test GR, you have to allow for variations in elastic physics. You basically marginalize over the uncertainty.
Yeah, as I said, we test GR. It's a consistency test of GR. Any other model that you want to try, you have to change all these things that I said. Okay, you have to have actually a different linear theory, you have to have a different mass function, you have to have different collapse model. All that can be done in the process of that, but you have to choose the theory for that. Okay, you have to choose a theory, have all this information and test. We choose a theory, GR. We have all this information
so
for GR.
You do not marginalize over the uncertainty classic physics.
No, because that's not what is this test. Like, that wouldn't make sense because that's not what the test is. We'll do that for a different modified gravity model, as we are already currently doing, but that's not what this test is. This test is GR, so we include all the information from GR.
So in principle, some sort of classical physics could mimic this behavior, you would never say it.
Yeah, that we'll see in the next test. So that's a particular test that we test that.
And what you're basically testing is a growth factor.
Yeah.
If that's a prediction of
yeah.
GR or not.
Yeah.
I think that's the only thing you test.
That's what we test.
So can you motivate that ansatz a little more?
Sorry?
Can you motivate the ansatz you make for generalized growth factor?
So,
if you go back to this formula, it seems rather ad hoc.
This comes actually already from Peebles 1980. So this comes from the redshift distortions data. Basically, they figured out at some point that this parametrization is fits GR constant with a constant power law. And then recently, so this has been used for a while for this kind of purpose. And then recently, some people tried this parametrization for different purposes, and they actually figured out that something, for example, to other models, interestingly enough, have like a growth rate, but that this parameter is constant too. Like, for example, something like BGP, instead of 0.55, that's 0.68, for example. So it's interesting to see that actually in other different models have as well a constant value for this parameter. But there's not much more beyond that. And the main point here is that we can test the growth rate.
So that you're in a regime where Newtonian gravity is working. I mean, that's a bit much to call this a test of GR. Isn't it a bit much to call this a test of GR? It's
well,
really
we,
in a regime where Newtonian gravity is.
Well, we test the, as Martin said, the growth rate of GR. So,
or Newtonian gravity gives the same growth.
Oh, well. Yeah,
if
your growth rate would be at 2 sigma lower limit, that would screw up everything. So I think to get a constraint like that, I don't think that's particularly impressive, because if you would really pick a growth rate like that, all your structure formation evolution would be completely screwed up. That's a very different growth rate from what you have in GR and for lambda CDM. So if you would run a
Well, that's what we're testing, actually. But like we have some data.
I don't think it's a very strong test, and it's not very surprising because you have such a small baseline in Redshift.
No, actually, it is. So if we use only, yeah, but like, so that's the first time that we can test that properly at this Redshift, range. This is like a very, below Redshift 0.5 or below Redshift 1. So this is late times, and that's where we detect that there's cosmic acceleration, so that's where we're interested to see if there is some kind of effect. And then before that, if I use only the low redshift data at the 0.3, these constraints are totally locked. So there's no constraints at all on gamma. If I use all the other proof, if I use CMB, there's no basically no constraints. I'm using here is an extra constraint, there's no constraints. All the other proof, they give you no constraints on that. So we cannot screw up that much something because you use the data and the data doesn't care if it's gamma 0.5 or 1.2 or 2.
Which is where.
Right, and then we have clusters now, not that many, 34. So with only these 34 clusters, for the fact that we have now from 0.3 to 0.5, we get all these constraints. Like several factors of constraints just because of that. But all the other, the CMB and stuff like that wouldn't give you that. It is true that there's something else like the redshift space distortion where these parameterizations said they come from, you can have these kind of constraints as well from there, more or less consistently, although it has not been like a comprehensive analysis like that one. But it'll probably be consistent with that, but not with all the other proofs. So that, for the first time, you have this measurement. You would think that it would screw up, but actually the measurements, they cannot tell a low redshift unless you have actually the data that tells me that works at that level. So.
Separate models in some more fundamental way. I mean, the force law for gravity has been changed to one of our
so that's, or, yeah.
Or is there another scalar field or?
Right. That's the next step. Before doing that, the problem for that, as I said before, we need several things. So we need mass function, we need linear theory. So now for the first time, we're getting this information. So we have a collaboration on with like people that done for the first time this kind of simulation because we need to know nonlinear physics as we are saying as well here. So all that, there's like some recent work on that, spherical collapse, mass function, all that. We're getting that, we'll test it.
I thought DGP is just unstable anyways. It's not really a testable
theory. That's right, but there is, as you know, there's like, beyond DGP, there's these extra models that are trying to fix it, and then they have the same, you have the same expansion history, you can maybe test that. And anyway, I mean, I would be happy to test anything that you have information for, but of course, you have to have information. So there's only a few models that have information.
It does have a stable solution to like the non-accelerating branch of DGP. I think it's a stable, so that.
Give a lambda. So you want to use.
Yeah.
It doesn't give you lambda, but it does introduce this sort of modifications.
But you have a bare lambda.
Yeah.
Plus. And in the normal branch.
Yeah, that's what I meant. In the normal branch is one of the things that we're planning to test because they give you the same expansion history, but not the cluster growth. So actually, it's a place to test that.
Adrian's going to cut me off, but just before she does, one thing to point out about this is by definition, you can't then have something different from GR when omega is close to 1 in this formalism. So one interesting thing to know would be, can you have models where the growth rate is substantially different above redshift 1.
Right, yeah, that would be another
question you're never going to see.
Yeah, that would be another interesting question. That would be some like models, for example, like elevator kinetics and stuff like that. There's interesting models to test that, but we don't have the data, below,
sure.
A bit beyond redshift 1, but that's another interesting possibility there. Yeah, that would be interesting. So, this quickly, this, as I said before, we test these two. We can look at the paper, I'll skip that, because these are the two parameters, and this is the relations with gamma, so we test all that for cluster physics. So another interesting point here, that we have a very strong, we find
we find a very strong correlation between gamma and sigma. That's what I was going to comment with the previous result. You notice was 0.4 and 0.84 sigma. That's why there is, because there is a strong correlation between sigma and gamma. That's the correlation, that's the number, and that's the impressive number that you get, like, you know, for 0.8, where now a lot of the other proof think that is the answer. You know, you never been tested that because you only have 0.55. Now we open the parameter space, we have this degeneracy, so 4.8 corresponds to 0.55 with this high accuracy. Of course, the data cannot tell in this valley because there is a huge degeneracy. If sigma 8 is higher, gamma will go down. So what we want here is another independent proof of measurement of sigma 8, and we'll have you know, better constraints on gamma as well. We'll break this degeneracy. So there's a high correlation with these two. Okay. let's see. Okay, this is just to say, again, W, basically that's kind of one of the main conclusions. Lambda CDM, MGR, we feed them both at the same time, consistently for the first time, growth and expansion and growth histories. This is the constraint for all the data sets. This is where we are, okay? Okay, and then I'll skip quickly. We're not getting to the conclusion there, but I'll skip it quickly if the computer let me go. Again, this is the correlation is because of the CMB. You can look at the paper. This is the CMB giving you that. The correlation, not constraint on gamma. Summary. So I'm just going, we have constraints on neutrino masses. You can ask me later that are robust for all different models that we can include. This is just because of the constraint of sigma 8. And this is just the conclusions, simultaneously and self-consistently survey and follow-up data. We do it for the first time. We avoid selection bias, parameters, degeneracy, systematic uncertainties. All that is included in the analysis. We assure you that we have evidence, several pieces of evidence for excess heating from the cluster physics. These are constraints on dark energy. These are constraints on general relativity. The neutrino masses that I didn't share that much. The important thing here is that it's very robust when you add the clusters information to the other data sets. The data that the constraints do not degenerate that much when you include like tensors or omega k or all these extra parameters. That's the important thing. And they have very good constraints. We can test with clusters dark energy and gravity. And for the future, we have more max clusters. We have more chamber data. A spectrum RG Rosita in 2 or 3 years. That's going to be the next survey, like ROSET, but you know, two orders of magnitude below in flux. It's going to give you 100 and 1,000 galaxy clusters. That's going to, you know, give you a huge amount of information. All that, and WFXT is another, the American version, like with different characteristics. We can even resolve more the clusters and maybe do a mass-limited selection function directly. And SE and optical surveys, they're coming now. We can apply the same techniques that we developed here, importantly, for these new surveys coming, SE and optical. Thanks.
Time now, we have plenty of questions, and we're going to have a coffee break right now, so you can ask even more questions then. Can we try to keep the coffee break?